To receive weekly mailings of Rabbi Mansour's tapes or to sponsor a tape, call 718-375-1023. To hear Rabbi Mansour's daily halakha or to search the Rabbi's database of halachot, visit www.dailyhalacha.com. That's DAILYHALACHA.com. And now, Rav Mansour.
Beruchim Abayim, ladies. We're studying Perashat HaShavua. We're studying Perashat Tazria from the more difficult Perashiyot in the Torah. By no means the Perashat is not easy. It talks about all the laws of purification, Tahara, Tum'ah, contamination, a lot of laws that don't apply today, and many laws that are not applicable. So Be'ezat Hashem will try to make some practical applications from some of the Pesukim in the Torah. If you remember in last week's Perasha, it ended off with the laws of Kashrut. It ended off with the laws of eating kosher. I think we've exhausted that subject in a previous class, and we discussed it at length, the importance of eating kosher. In this week's Perasha, it talks about the laws of Lashon Hara, the laws of speaking bad speech, maligning people, causing people harm through the use of their tongue, negative talk, etc. So the rabbis explained the connection is that just as we must be very careful on what goes into our mouths, we must be just as vigilant on what comes out of our mouths. And therefore the Torah tells us that kashrut is the intake. That's the import business. But Lashon Hara is the export business. And therefore both of them are equal. Unfortunately, we find a paradox in human nature. We find many people that are very careful when it comes to the laws of kashrut. And God bless them. They're careful on the right milk, and on the right flour, and on the right meat. And again, we say they should be praised, and they should be blessed. But at the same time, they have to be just as careful with not only what goes into their system, but what comes out of their system. Following only half of the laws that pertain to the mouth is not Judaism. Judaism demands consistency in both directions. On the intake and on the outtake. And therefore we must be so vigilant and so careful when it comes to sins of speech. But I want to tell you a chidush that I saw today from Rav Palm. Rav Palm writes that many people mistakenly think that sins of speech emanate from a bad tongue. He says that's a mistake. Sins of speech emanate, he says, from a bad heart. When people are negative, when people are bitter, when people love to find the faults in people, that comes from a negativism. That negativism is not in the tongue. The tongue is only the pen of the heart. It's because the heart is faulty. Because a person can't see good in others. It might come from jealousy. It might come from bad character. So therefore the tikkun, the fixing of the tongue, must begin with the fixing of the heart. He says a great example. Why does a parent always defend his child or her child? And no matter what the child does, a parent will always automatically go on the defensive mode. No, he didn't mean it. It was a mistake. It was unintentional. He meant good. A parent will defend the child better than any lawyer. Why? He says, because the parent loves the child. And where there exists love, then there's no negativity. Like the Pasuk in Mishneh says, Al kol pesha'im techase ahava. When there's love, the worst things can happen, but love covers up all iniquity. Rav Palm tells stories about his mother. His mother was a righteous lady. Rarely did she speak Lashon Hara. But she wasn't from the people that when she was in social places and others were talking Lashon Hara, she didn't chastise them and say, Lashon Hara, Lashon Hara. She was not of that nature. but in her brilliance and soft way, she would change the subject. Or she would give the benefit of the doubt and give a different interpretation of maybe what one somebody of her friends commented, no, maybe she meant this or maybe she did that. This was a nature that obviously transcended to her great son, Rav Pam. The Gaon de Vilna wrote a letter to his children before he embarked on his trip to Eretz Yisrael. I find it quite interesting to what was the main focus of that letter. What was the priority? What message was the Gaon de Vilna giving his children? If I had to bet without seeing the letter, I would have bet he would have told them all high levels of religion. After all, the Gaon de Vilna was a very holy man. I would expect him to tell his children, don't forget to do this mitzvah and that mitzvah, and of course, charity and etc. And 90% of the letter is devoted to watch your speech. Watch what comes out of your mouth. And he goes on to bring sources from all over the value of silence and how much angels are created at a time where a person has an urge to say something negative and controls it. He writes there, at that moment, there's an illumination in the heavens, such a positive explosion of spirituality that even an angel cannot withstand the Kiddushah that's created from a moment of silence, of controlling your tongue. And he went on to tell his daughters how careful they have to be. He even advised them, if you can imagine this, not to go to synagogue. Imagine a rabbi advising his children, his daughters specifically, not to go to synagogue. And he writes there, because in synagogue you're going to see things and people are going to be talking and there's sometimes jealousy and there's sometimes chatter and you're going to be going to the synagogue to do a mitzvah, to pray to God, and you're going to end up talking what she wore and what she had and what she didn't do and what she said, and therefore can turn into a forum of Lashon Hara. But there's another form of speech that might be neglected, that we don't talk about that often, and that's called Ona'at Devarim. Ona'at Devarim is abusive speech. Speech that causes pain to others. It's not Lashon Hara, but we say a word to our friend or to somebody close to us, or for that matter, anybody that hurts. A statement that penetrates the soul of a person. Something that might embarrass or cause, or on purpose, to irk them, to bother them, to make a snide remark. According to the Torah, it's not Lashon Hara. I'm telling the person directly. This is called Ona'ah. It's even worse than Lashon Hara. And as parents, how careful we have to be from such negative remarks. There was a story told, I read the story, I'm shocked a parent could do such a thing, but it seems it happened. There was a girl, she was preparing to buy her mother a birthday present. A little girl, so she saved her allowance every week, and she went to the store and she bought a little, small little trinket, something, junk really, but that's what she bought, and she's excited about it. And her heart is palpitating. Her mother's going to see the item, and she's going to get so excited, and what it means to her, and she wrapped it up, and she puts it on the dining room table, and her mother walks into the dining room table and sees it there and opens it up and says, well, what's this? And the girl is so excited. I bought you a birthday present. And the mother says, you wasted your money on this junk? And you can imagine the damage. Such a damage is unrepairable. It's irreparable. Such a damage stays with that child forever. All because the parent was not careful in making a positive statement to a child. Thank you. This is the parent cares if it's a trinket or it's worth $2. That you missed the whole point over. You wasted your money. This is wasting money, having feelings. But again, it's a statement that I'm sure the mother regretted 5 seconds after she said it. It was like a knee jerk. But what are you going to do? Take it back? I didn't mean it. Once it comes out, very hard to take back the word. And therefore the Torah comes and tells us, now you learned the laws of Kashrut, now you have to start learning the laws of Kashrut HaLashon, what comes out of your mouth. And the Torah tells us that the punishment for sins of speech is leprosy. And the punishment of leprosy, it's not a regular skin disease, it's not eczema, it's a spiritual sickness. And the Torah tells us that the person that gets this leprosy, he must go to the Kohen. And the Kohen looks at it and examines it and says, yes, this is the real thing. You must be talking Lashon Hara. And they send him into quarantine. They send him outside the camp. They send him in solitary confinement. And on the way out, could you imagine the embarrassment? He have a man now, he's filled his body all with all sorts of skin lesions. And he must leave his house. And he's again walked by the Kohen and everybody around him. And on the way out, he must scream, Tameh, Tameh. I'm Tameh, I'm contaminated, I'm contaminated. So the Gemara asks, why does he have to do that? So the simple explanation is, so people will keep away from him. After all, we don't want people to get contaminated. So it's like he's saying, I'm sick, get away, don't nobody come near me, I'm Tameh. But the rabbis tell us a deeper reason. We want him to scream Tameh, Tameh, so people will see that he's sick, and they'll pray for him. It's like a man calling out, I need help, I need help. I don't feel good. I have lesions on my body. Dechila, pray for me. So one of the rabbis asked, pray for yourself. We have a rule. The rule is, one's personal prayers are always more valuable than somebody else praying for you. Because when you pray for yourself, there's nothing more genuine than that. You know what you need. And therefore, what is this? I have to now engage other people to pray for him. Pray for yourself. And the rabbi Hafetz Chaim answered, because those people that misuse their tongue, God does not answer their prayers. Because we use the same mouth to pray. If the mouth is malfunctioning, the mouth that can speak Lashon Hara, the mouth that can speak derogatorily, the mouth that can malign, the mouth that can needle people, you're going to use that same mouth? The mouth is broken. So God says, I can't hear your prayers. So this man over here, he must elicit other people to pray for him. He says, please, I'm not only Tameh, but I need a refuah shlema, and my mouth, since it's malfunctioning, cannot pray to God for that refuah shlema. And therefore, others must pray for him. How careful, how much prayers do we need for ourselves, for our families, especially in these troubling times? How much do we need God to answer our tefillot? So for that alone, the benefit of watching our speech is valuable. Hakamim tell us, if you ever noticed, when we go into the holiday of Kippur, the first thing we do on Kippur night is Kal Nidre. Kal Nidre is we stand up and we ask God to forgive us if we made any vows, if we cursed, if we said anything that was improper. And for Jews, the moment of Kal Nidre is one of the most solemn moments of the year. And we ask, why does Kippur open up with atonement for sins of speech? I mean, that's the highlight of the night, Kal Nidre. And the explanation is because on Kippur we're going to spend 25 hours in synagogue praying. If we don't want the Kippur to be futile and a waste of time, first we have to fix the mouth. If we're going to pray 25 hours with a mouth that speaks all type of terrible things, what did you do on Kippur? God, it doesn't work. There was no reception. The mouth was broken. So we start Kippur, Hashem, please forgive me for any bad talk, for vows, for curses, for bad speech, etc. Now that the mouth, you made teshuvah on it, now it has the ability to fix and settle things going forward on Kippur Day itself. In introducing the laws of leprosy, the Torah calls the person that gets the leprosy Adam. It says, Adam ki yihyeh be'or besaro. If an Adam has on his skin, God forbid, sara'at. The rabbis ask, why do we call him Adam? There's different ways to call a person. Sometimes we call a person an ish. So the rabbis explain like this. The word ish is a singular terminology. If we'd want to say ish in plural, we'd say anashim. Adam, however, is a word that there's no plurality to it. Adam is Adam. We don't say Adamim. Adam is man. There is no plural usage of the word Adam to teach us the following, that when one speaks Lashon Hara, the Jews are all united. The Jews are connected. There's a certain bond and unity that Jews have for each other that no nation has. Just think for a moment. When we hear that there's a Jew in trouble on the other side of the world, Jews throughout the world mobilize in order to help that Jew. Where did that camaraderie come from? Where did that connection come from? You don't even know the guy, but you know that he's Jewish? Automatically everybody wants to help. Did the Goyim have such a camaraderie? Certainly not. A few years ago, simultaneously in the news, there was some Jews that went hiking somewhere in the mountains, and one of them got lost. 3 or 4 hours away from New York, and hundreds of volunteers from New York drove to the mountains, wherever it was, and they scoured out into the wilderness to find the man that was missing. And they saw an amazing amount of ahdut, of unity, of people. People don't even know who the guy is. They went, Jews missing, they went, and they found him in the mountains. That same week, there was a missing baby in New York. Nobody should ever know from such a thing, but a missing baby in the city. Goya lost her baby, and she pleaded on the television, please help me find my baby, etc. And then they show 6 volunteers walking around the city, asking questions, trying to find. In New York, there's 40 million people in the tri-state area. 6 people come along. Where's all the... There's no connection between the people in the world. One rabbi compared it, Shlomo HaMelech. They once brought in front of him 2 people. They looked identically alike. They masqueraded them, so they looked alike. One was Jewish, one was not Jewish. They asked Shlomo HaMelech, they said, you're the wisest of all men. Tell us who's the Jew and who's not the Jew. Shlomo said, no problem. He took grapes. He put 2 plates of grapes in front of them. One, the grapes were still attached to the stalk. The other, the grapes were individual. They were just lying in the plate. He told the children, eat. The one that ate the individual grapes, he said, you're goy. The one that took from the stalk, he said, you're Jewish. They said, how did you know? He said, because the Jews are all connected. It's in their nature. The one that eats from the separate one, that's an indication that he's a separate. They live individually. And therefore, when one, if a Gentile would talk Lashon Hara, there was no connection there anyway to start off with. So you're not dividing. It's divided from the onset. But when Jews talk about each other, there's a connection. It's close. Think about it. When there's a fight in family, a family fight is always worse than any other type of fight. The Jews themselves were an extended family. There's a unity amongst them. And therefore the sins of Lashon Hara divides. And therefore the Torah uses the word Adam. Adam is a singular word. Because the Jews, they're not many individuals. They're called Adam. It's one entity. It's one unit. And therefore the Torah says, you spoke Lashon Hara and tried to divide that unit. What do we do to that person? Go out of the camp. You want to be divisive? You have no room in our community. The people that want to divide, so you can divide yourself. You can live alone in quarantine. But who's the one that renders the person tameh for sara'at the kohen? Listen to the genius of the Torah. The kohen, especially Aharon that we're talking about here, he was known to be a man of peace. We've said many times, Aharon was called Ohev Shalom, Verodev Shalom. Aharon was a unifier. Aharon saw 2 people fighting, he made peace between them. He saw couples having Shalom Bayit, he negotiated, he made settlements. He saw people that were not following the word of God, he embraced them. Aharon was a peacemaker. So they come along to this person that divides and they say, you need to talk to Aharon HaKohen. You need to see this role model in order that you learn exactly what the avon is that you try to break up the Jewish people. There's a famous Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Kol ha-nega'im adam ro'eh, chutz min-nega'i atzmo. The Gemara has a case like this. Let's say a person is a Kohen and he gets leprosy. Is he allowed to make a diagnosis on his own leprosy? The Gemara says no. A Kohen is able to make a diagnosis on everybody else's leprosy, but not on his own. That's the law. The simple reason being, because he's not going to be objective. You know, nobody wants to say that they're tameh. Nobody wants to say that they're sick. Nobody wants to say that they're making avonot. So you need somebody else to come and tell you. He can tell everybody in the world their problems. But himself, he's not allowed to diagnose. We learn from here a great psychology of human beings. In life, we're the same way. It's very easy for us to see everybody else's shortcomings. We can make diagnosis. Her problem is she's too jealous. Her problem is she's too materialistic. Her problem is that she's that and she's this. But it's very difficult for us to make a diagnosis about our own problems. The shortcomings of others, we're able to write a list from here to tomorrow discussing the problems of others. However, the Mishnah says, "En adam ro en gai atzmo." But it's very difficult to see your own shortcomings. And therefore, our great rabbis were very careful to have somebody come and rebuke them often. Because they knew the nature of a person, you can't see what you're doing wrong. We always justify whatever we're doing. We can never be wrong. So you need somebody from the outside to tell you, "You excuse me, you forgive me, you're making a mistake." The Gaon Mevilna, was anybody greater than the Gaon Mevilna in his time? But he was concerned. He said, "Nobody's going to rebuke me." So we used to hire a rabbi called the Magid Meduvna. I used to pay him. He used to say, "I pay you every day you come to my house and rebuke me. Don't tell me what I'm doing right. Tell me my mistakes. Tell me my shortcomings." There was another rabbi called the Maharshal. He used to hire a taxi driver, a simple man, and give him money every day that he should point out his shortcomings. There's a story told about the Hiddushei Harim. Hiddushei Harim was a rabbi that studied in a certain Hasidish community called Kuznets. And then he felt it wasn't for him. So he left. He told the rabbi, I'm going to learn somewhere else. An unfortunate thing happened. This Hiddushei Harim, he lost many of his children. And he said, "I'm scared and I'm worried that maybe the reason why I lost my children is maybe I upset my previous rabbis that I left them. But I had no choice. Because where I learned in Kuznets, they used to tell me I'm great. They used to tell me I'm a Sadiq. They used to tell me I'm going to Olam Abba. And that didn't help me. But where I went to the new yeshiva to study, they told me, 'You're not good, you have a long way to go, you have a lot of tikkun to make,' and this is what I needed to hear. I didn't need to hear that I'm great, I needed to hear musar." And that's why the rabbis tell us, always love the people that rebuke you, and be cautious of the people that compliment you. Because the people that compliment you, well, it's good to hear a compliment, but it doesn't do well for you. It doesn't make you better. It causes complacency. But the people that rebuke you, they will gain you Olam Abba. That's why the Mishnah says, in life you need two allies. Mishnah says, "Aseh lecha rav, ukneh lecha chaver." Make for yourself a rabbi, and make for yourself a friend. You need these two people in order to keep you in line. In the Torah's eyes, a friend is not a social friend. A friend is not a friend unless she can or he can rebuke you. If a friend comes along and does you great and goes out with you and lets you get away with all types of things and doesn't say anything, this is not a friend. This might be a social companion, but it's not a haver. A rabbi the same way. A rabbi that comes along and placates everybody. Everybody's good. Everybody's a Sadiq. Everybody's going to Gan Eden. Nobody worry. This rabbi is not a rabbi. Rabbi Yisrael Salanta said, any rabbi that speaks from the pulpit and the community and the people that he speaks to are never upset of what he says. They never get ruffled from what he says. Rabbi Yisrael says that he's not a rabbi. He's not doing his job. But he says any rabbi that ruffles the Sibu so much that they fire him, said he's not a person because he went too much. So therefore, even a rabbi's obligation is to rebuke. There was somebody that went to a doctor. So the doctor says, "I'm sorry to tell you, but you have a disease." And the fellow says, "How could you tell me this? Don't you have compassion? Don't you have sensitivity? Tell me good things. Because I love to tell you good things. You're a tzaddik. You're gaon. I love you. But yet you have a disease. So I don't like this doctor. He always has bad reports. I'm going to go to a positive doctor. Why does he have to tell me these things? Don't you go to a doctor in order to hear what the state of your health is? If he does you bad, he's helping you. He's not trying to hurt you. So when a rabbi comes along and rebukes a kahal and tries to give musar, what do you mean? It's the rabbi's getting high on rebuking people? Of course not. He's as a doctor, as a professional, he's coming to say this is a mistake. For your own benefit, fix it. The Hafiz Haim used to say to his kahal many times, I don't want you to have claims to me in Olam Abba. That we're going to go to get an Eden and the God's going to say, how come you didn't do this? And you're going to come to me, said the Hafiz Haim, and say, you were the rabbi of the town. You knew we were doing this. How come you didn't tell us? How come you didn't warn us? He says it's a double-edged sword. In this world, nobody wants to be rebuked. But in the next world, he says, you're going to blame the rabbi. How come you didn't rebuke me? So the rabbi could never win. In this world, they tie him up. And Olam Abba, they blame him. Hey, you should have told us. But you tied me up. Oh, you shouldn't have listened. So therefore, that never works. Smart is the person that has an open ear in order to hear the rebuke of others. Torah tells us in the beginning of Parashah also about a lady that gives birth either to a boy or to a girl. But one common denominator between it is that after a certain amount of days, 7 days after a boy, 14 days after a girl, the lady must bring a korban. The lady must bring a sacrifice. And the Torah tells us it's actually a sacrifice of atonement. It's kapara. So the rabbi says, kapara? The lady didn't make a sin, Azita. She gave birth. What type of sin is it in giving birth? So the Hakamim tell us, because it's the nature when somebody is giving birth, and we know this, they make vows. At the times they're giving birth, they say, because of the pain, the excruciating suffering, I'm never having a baby again. I'm never going to let my husband talk to me. I'm never going to go near him. It's terrible. I don't want any more children. You start making all these type of vows. And of course, haram to make such vows over here. You didn't mean it. You said it in duress. So therefore, you need atonement. So the Hakamim tell us, for a boy, some of the rabbis wanted to say, well, at least the husband is happy because he has a boy. So it takes her 7 days to regret that she made the vow. But 14 days for a girl, because the husband's upset that he had a girl sometimes. So therefore, the lady's upset at the husband. The lady says, what kind of business? You upset? It takes her 14 days to recover. Of course, this is not a normal reaction. On the contrary, the Gemara says very clearly that one of the biggest blessings is if a person has a girl, especially if the girl is born first. The Gemara says why? Because if a person has a girl first, it's as if there's a second mother in the house. Which means this child now is going to be the oldest. There are going to be other children now born in the house. Sometimes overwhelming on the mother. But if there's a girl in the house, boy's not going to help the mother. The boys are the ones that need the caring to. So therefore the Gemara says, Batri shona siman yafeh lebanim. If the girl is born first, it's a good sign. So the attitude of some people, the old-fashioned, old-style, it's a girl, they get angry, they make these type of things. Of course, it's not the Torah logic. But there's another reason. The reason why a lady suffers in childbirth is as a result of the sin of Hava. When Eve ate from the tree, God punished her. So a lady now, at the time that she's giving birth, she might have claims against God. She might be telling God, why am I suffering? I didn't eat from the tree. because a lady 3,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago, ate a little etrog from a tree. So I have to suffer? It's her avon. What am I paying for? So she might have claims, not against her husband, but she might have claims against God. Or those thoughts might not even be verbalized, but they might go through her mind. Why is God doing this to me? I'm tzaddiket. I'm good. I go to shul. I pray. I read tehillim. I did challah. I ate melaveh malkah. I'm doing all these things. Why do some ladies have it easy? Why don't I have it easy? I'm just as good. I'm better. So all these type of thoughts now, when a person is giving birth, go through a person's mind questioning God's ways. And therefore, to atone for those skeptical thoughts on God, the Torah says that one has to bring a korban following it. The Torah tells us also in Perashah that the korban that she brings it says Uben Yonah or Tor. Either brings a Ben Yonah, is a type of bird, it's like a dove, or a Tor. Tor is also a type of bird. It's an older dove. So the rabbis ask a question. Usually throughout the whole Torah, whenever these birds are mentioned, it always mentions the Tor before the Yonah, the older bird and then the younger bird. Here it goes out of its way and mentions the younger bird, the Yonah, or the Tor. So the rabbis explain like this, because there's something inherent about these two birds. They're very loyal to their spouse. And in this case, the Torah tells us you have to bring one bird. So what you're going to do is you're going to split up you're splitting up a marriage. And the rabbis tell us that the dove is so loyal that, God forbid, if one of them is missing or one of them dies, the other dove will never remarry. She has loyalty to the spouse forever. So the Torah is telling us that you got to bring a korban. So now the question is, whose marriage do you want to break up over here? Who's going to feel the pain more? A Yonah is a young dove. So they're married for a year. A Tor is older. It's married much longer. So therefore the Torah is concerned that if you break up a Tor, if you take a Tor for first option, the pain of the spouse is going to be that much greater. So if you have an option, take a Yonah first, because the pain on the spouse will be less. If you can't take a Yonah, you can take a Tor. But the Torah says, take a Yonah first. Look at the sensitivity. Who would think of these things? Who could dream such a level of compassion that the Torah has on an animal? You know, animal rights just became popular in our time. Now you have all the wackos talking about animals and things and fur coats and all this craziness. This became a modern social issue. Could you imagine 5,000 or 3,000 years ago in the Midbar, before all this craziness came about, the Torah already had a true sense of compassion. Does such a people have compassion on animals? Ask any of these people that are marching in Manhattan throwing paint on people that are wearing fur coats. If they see a cockroach in the house, what are they going to do to it? Make a party for it? They're going to dance with it? They'll kill it. Oh, what do you mean? So they're also hypocrites. They're also fakers. When it's convenient for them, then they have compassion. When it's not convenient, they don't have compassion. The Torah's sensitivity goes far beyond any type of human thought. Lastly, I'd like to say a story that we read in this week's Haftarah. In this week's Haftarah, we read about a fellow, a king actually. His name was Naaman. Naaman was a king that had leprosy for most of his life. And he tried everything to cure himself, and nothing worked. So his advisors came to him and said, "Listen, Naaman, there's a Jewish prophet. His name is Elisha. Why don't you go to Elisha? He's a miracle man. Ask him for a beracha. Ask him for some sort of advice. Maybe he can cure you." So the Navi tells us that the king came to visit him. Vayavo Naaman besusav uberichpo. He came with his entourage. He came with his people. Vayamod peta habayit leElisha. And he stands in front of Elisha's house. Elisha sends out a message and says, "All right, here's the cure. Go to the Jordan River, dip 7 times, and you're good. Your leprosy will go away." What do you think Naaman's reaction was? I mean, seemingly it's an easy item. That's it. He's giving you the recipe. Nobody can cure you your whole life. The rabbis tell us a leper is like he's dead. It's painful. It's hard. Here you have an answer. Go dip in the Jordan. Vayiksof Naaman. Naaman gets angry. Vayilach. Vayomer ini amati ilai yitzi yatzo v'amad v'kana b'shem Hashem ulav v'enif yado l'makom v'asav v'mesorah. That's what I wanted to hear. I thought he's going to come out. I thought he was going to go like this to me, say abracadabra, say some type of spell on me in God's name, and he's going to cure me. I'm not interested. Shtuyot, I'm going, I'm leaving. The rabbis all are amazed. Naaman, you're crazy. The guy told you to go dip in the Jordan River. Who's the guilty one over here? Who's the one that has the problem? You're turning it and making it as if Elisha did something wrong? You came for his help. He gave you an idea. And now your claim is what? He's supposed to come out. He should have blessed me. What kind of thing? From here the rabbis learn, look what kavod can do to a person. Look what a person that goes after his prestige and his honor. Naaman has a claim. How come he didn't come out to see me? He should have blessed me. Who was he to tell me to go in the Jordan River? I'm Naaman. Naaman, you're playing kavod now. You're letting your kavod go in the way, so much so that you're willing to stay a leper now for the rest of your life and not go in the Jordan River. You'll spite yourself. You'll cause yourself pain in order not to give in to the prophet because he slighted your kavod, because he didn't come out to greet you, because he didn't come out and give you a beracha. So the people there, they can't believe his reaction. The people tell him, Vaydaberu elav, vayomeru, avi, davar gadol nevi diber elecha. What are you doing? Rahatzutar. Go into the water and get cured. You see, Naaman heard his advisors, and he went to the Jordan River 7 times, and he came out, his skin was like a baby. He got cured. But you see the benefit of rebuke? Because he had advisors that rebuked him. Imagine his advisors would have told Naaman, you're right. Who was the prophet to tell you to go to the Jordan River? We have rivers in Damascus. We have rivers in the north and the south that are much better. He's going to tell us to go, let him go jump in the lake. We're not going into any lake. He's right. He can't talk to you like that. He should have given you a beracha. Imagine they would have fueled it. But Naaman's luck was that he had people around him, again, friends that didn't pat him on the back and tell him, you're right. He had friends that told him, you're a jerk. What are you doing? You're not going to go dip in the waters. You're a leper your whole life. It's stupidity what you're saying. Put your kavod on the side for a minute. Swallow your pride, Naaman. Go dip in the waters. And he listened. Again, you see the power of having friends that rebuke. So he went. Torah tells us when he came out of the water, he was so amazed. He said, I can't believe it. It worked. Hakamim tell us Naaman converted. He wasn't Jewish. He converted. But the Hakamim ask, he converted. What about all his advisors? His advisors are the ones that are telling him, you got to listen, you got to do. He did it. He came out clean. They should have converted. They should have said, oh, look, we knew it. We told you. And the explanation is, the rabbis tell us, there was a big difference between Naaman and his advisors. Naaman suffered his whole life with leprosy. And therefore, when he got healed, he was able to feel the miracle that God did for him. To those that were around him, they saw it, but they cannot fully sympathize with what Naaman went through. To them, it's a nice thing, it's an awesome thing. But they're not. They didn't live it. So therefore, when Naaman came out of the woods, he says, I don't believe it. I'm better. From here you see, God communicates to every individual in our lives, in all of our lives, certain things happened where they're nothing less than miraculous. Whether we were saved from an accident, God forbid, or we were put in some place at the right time, or somewhere else where things should have happened and didn't, for the best. These are all lessons. It might not inspire others when you tell the story. When you tell the story, look what happened to me, unbelievable, I was supposed to go. Okay, very nice, unbelievable. They walk away and they go do their own thing. If it's not going to motivate others, at least, it should motivate the person that it happened to. Imagine if Naaman would have came out of the river and went back to becoming continue being a goy that he was. God turned over the whole world without any reaction. The lesson is to hear the messages that God sends us. In life, God sends us, I can't tell you how many, but there's a number. Some people get 5, some people get 10. These are all gifts from God in order to bring you to the next level. Haram that if God does something out of the ordinary for you, and does something extraordinary, and you just say, wow, and you walk away, and you don't use it to go to the next level, so it was wasted. It's a berachah lebatala. There was one story of a rabbi that was very diligent. He used to come to the synagogue every Shabbat to deliver his class. He comes to the class one Shabbat. It's pouring rain. Nobody's there. The shul's empty. The rabbi was a funny type of guy. He says, "That's it. I'm supposed to give the class. I'm going to give the class." He's talking to chairs now. It's empty. And he starts, and he's analyzing, and he's reading, and he's doing. In the meantime, what happened? There was a not religious guy. He was walking in the rain. He has his shopping bags. He just came from the department store. It's pouring rain. He couldn't even make it to his car. It was 3 o'clock. He said, "You know what? What is this building here? Okay, it's a shul. Let me stay in the shul till it stops raining." It happened to be it was raining and raining. So he went up to the ladies section. He put all his bags. He went to the back row. And he went to sleep in the ladies section. All of a sudden, he hears a rabbi banging the Torah and the thing and the mitzvah and Hashem. So what's going on over here? He looks down. He says, "The guy's Mishnuin. Who's he talking to? The place is empty over here." So all of a sudden, some of the rabbi's words, they caught his ear. He starts to say, "Wow, this guy's okay. This guy makes sense." And he's listening from the lady. The rabbi has no idea he's there. All of a sudden, 3/4 into the class, the guy gets up and says, "I make the shuba. You got me. I'm in. Finished. I'm sorry." The rabbi says, "Where did you come from?" So he says, "Unbelievable. If God sent me here to this shul in the rain, and God put some type of ridiculous idea in your mind to give a class to empty chairs, there's no question that this is a setup that God brought me here. I'm not going to let this go. To me, it's an open miracle. I'm not going to let this get wasted." Now, of course, when we hear the story, it's a motivating story, but it's not going to change any of us. Because it happened to that guy. It didn't happen to us. That's exactly what happened to Naaman's servants. It's a great story. They saw it. It registered, but they said, "Azar Baru, it doesn't do anything for us." But Naaman said, "What are you talking? God was talking to me. You might have seen it, but I heard God." And therefore it changed them. We have to take advantage of those moments. And I heard from my rabbis that one of the greatest ways to get God to do these things to you, so you could see God, that the coincidences happen, the greatest way to get God to do these things is to document them. When I heard that from my rabbis, I started a book, a personal book, like a diary. Every time I saw something out of the ordinary, look how this happened, look how that, but things that were startling events, I wrote them down. And once in a while, at times when I want to strengthen my own imunah, I open up this diary. And I say, "Unbelievable, if this wouldn't have happened in my life, and I wouldn't have met that person, and I didn't see the things that are unbelievable." But I noticed from the time that I started documenting them, already they started to happen more often. If a person appreciates a gift from somebody, you'll give them another gift. Imagine giving somebody a gift, they don't say thank you, they don't call you back, they don't reciprocate. So maybe you'll give them another gift. But after that, they don't reciprocate, they don't call you back, they don't show you a smile, "I'm not getting the guy a gift anymore." These are gifts from God. When God sees that you appreciate it, and you understood it, and it registered, and you moved, and you changed because of it, God said, "This is a good customer. He's a good receiver. He knows how to, he's decent. He receives the gift with the proper attitude." And therefore God says, "Give him more. Put him on the list. Put him on the list for giving every year." So that's one way, ladies, in order to hear the message of God, like Naaman did. In the beginning he was stubborn. Sometimes it takes a friend to come and tell you, "Fool, look what God did for you. He went, he brought you, he took you, and you didn't do anything." Naaman was lucky that he has advisors that didn't placate him. They didn't tell him, "You're great, you're Sadiq." They told him, "You're a fool. Go dip in the waters and you'll be fine." And that's the lesson of today. When the fellow has leprosy, he has to go to the Kohen. He doesn't go to the local doctor, because the Kohen is the rabbi of the time. The rabbi is going to tell him, "You spoke Lashon Hara, you made a mistake, you made a avum." We have to bring this guy connected to the Kohen in order that he'll hear the truth of where his problem lies, and I'll be able to heal it. Ladies, let's accept upon ourselves these concepts, and Bezat Hashem will no more sorrow. Amen.